This is Border Crossings, radio's number one request hour. And now, your host, Larry London.
Hi, welcome to Border Crossings. It's a very special Thursday program I have for you today. I am so excited to welcome into our studios three music icons. We have a group that have given us some very, very big hits over the decades. And they are here in Washington, D.C., and took time to stop by to talk to us. We'd like to welcome the OJs to Border Crossings and the Voice of America. So get ready for an hour of some great R&B music. Get ready to dance. We've got the OJs coming up today on Border Crossings.
Beautiful, beautiful, do funny things.
Hi, welcome to Border Crossings. We have a very, very special show today. I'm very excited. We have Grammy-winning artists in our studios, guys who've had 10 number one songs and millions of records sold around the world. We'd like to welcome to Washington, D.C., celebrating their first new album in two decades, which is called The Last Word. We welcome to D.C. and the Voice of America, the OJs.
Yay! Yay!
Yay! Yay! Yay! We've got a live audience out there. People love the OJs. You guys, congratulations on, this is the sixth decade, I guess, now?
Sixth decade.
Yeah,
yeah. Ain't that something?
Amazing.
That sounds ancient, doesn't it?
It does. Now, how? I mean, honestly, how do you sustain, how do you keep going? How does this, you know, business is changing so rapidly, and it has since you started, but you guys, you're still here, and you're still the originals, and you're still doing your thing.
Well, you gotta love it, and the people—that's what keeps me in it. That's what keeps me in it. The people—they come out. We're still selling out on material that's at least 25, 30 years old. Goes back to 1972. For the Love of Money, Love Train, Backstabbers. That's a compliment within itself. And we're now seeing three generations: people our age, ancient people. Prehistoric.
Seasoned. I use the word seasoned.
That's good. I like that. And we're seeing their children and their children. So it's great. And as long as I'm physically able to do it, I'm going to do it. And I know we're saying that we're retiring. Well, we are. But slowly.
Slowly. Nobody wants to lose you guys. You guys are loved everywhere. You were here for the 4th of July recently in D.C.
Yes.
And people still respond and react, and your songs resonate. And, you know, we just can't get music like you made. We just can't find that music. And of course, with the new album, we can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that the new album, Last Word, has songs you've worked with Bruno Mars on one of the songs.
Yeah.
This is very exciting. Yeah. You've kind of, you know, gotten some of today's artists to work with you on this new project.
Tell me, are you here alone? No, don't answer that, 'cause the fact is I don't wanna know. If you told me, hold me like a poolside chair.
Why did you wait so long for a new album?
To find the proper people that were interested in doing it and wanted to make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a lot of people that talk at you and say, well, you should do another album. Let's do another album. But finding the people who want to do it the proper way and make it happen and do the promotion mm-hmm. behind it also. I think we got with the right people as far as Steve Greenberg and the people over at
BMG. You're protecting a brand. You're protecting an image. So you just can't really do a new record with anyone. Mm. It has to be someone that, you know, knows what they're doing and have some kind of affiliation with people that can get it done. BMG certainly can get it done,
mm-hmm. and they also have to have a feel for the artist,
for
the group.
Absolutely,
they have to know what that brand is about and to what degree of music that they did before. So you don't want to cheapen that, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? So what the OJs did was they did real music, they did what they do best, social. They talked about social issues, and then they did love songs too, which they do best. So you got to find a company that's willing to let them be them, and let them do what they did in the past. You know what I mean? But just make it modern, make it today.
Mm. And they put us with producers like Betty Wright, Sam Hollander, who's a monster on the charts these days. So. Couldn't question that, and so all we had to do was deliver. So,
and today's game is more a producer-driven game, where the producers really
the stars.
They're the stars.
They're the stars.
You
know, the producers are the
stars. They're telling you how to sing it. Mm-hmm. They can give you a line for line and make a record out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? For the whole song. So it's more producer-driven than an artist. Nowadays,
I had never recorded a record like that you do line for line. Normally, you go learn a song mm-hmm. and you make it yours and mm-hmm. you get into it. But this was different. And then that show we did for America's Birthday, that's the biggest show I've ever done because Big Bird was on that show.
You get no bigger than Big Bird.
No, you don't get no bigger than Big Bird. You kidding me?
We're talking with the OJs, Walter Williams, Eric Grant, Eddie Levert, and these guys are icons, legends. It never gets old, I imagine, whenever somebody says you are legends. I mean, that's quite an honor, a badge to wear. And you guys have achieved that status through all of the great music you've given us and all of the other great things you've done and the message you've sent. And you were in a movie with Beyonce. So, I mean, you guys, I'm in awe of you. And really, it is an honor to have you on our show today and to have you in our studios. Now, you know, you came to the name the OJs. You were the mascots. You were the triumphs. How did you decide the OJs? What's the connection of the name of the OJs?
We didn't decide it. We went to Detroit to strike a deal.
Your hometown. My hometown.
okay. It's been a great place for us. Mm. And Eddie O.J., who was a disc jockey in Cleveland, took us to meet with Berry Gordy. Well, that deal didn't work out. But his wife, Thelma, she had a record situation. And we got with her, and we signed, and we didn't have a name. They didn't like mascots. We didn't like mascots. But that was Sid Nathan at King Records. He wanted a two-syllable name. So in changing the name, Eddie O.J. said, look, just call them O.J.'s Boys for now, and we'll come up with something. We'll let you know. I'm in Cleveland. I'm at the house. And I hear, here's a new one by the O.J.'s. And it was How Does It Feel? Ball and Chain, everybody called it. And it was a local success, nothing major, but it got the ball rolling. Mm. And that's how we became the OJs.
Do you guys have a favorite moment to date? I mean, I'm sure it's different for each one of you, but a favorite time that you've enjoyed? 60 years is a long time to pick a moment, but is there something that stands out that if you were writing your story, you're writing a book or a movie about the OJs, what would be your moment?
For me, Walter, was the induction into the Rock Hall, because we had been waiting for that. They had put us in the hat so many times.
And you're in several times. You're not only in once, right? The Grammy Song Hall of Fame has a couple of songs in it.
Oh, yeah.
And several different Hall of Fames.
R&B,
Lifetime Achievement, you guys are amazing.
We've been blessed. But the one for me was the Rock Hall, because it's so many great artists in the Rock Hall that you get to rub elbows with now.
And I think for me, I have to split hairs, because it's a toss up between the Essence Festival, 87,000 people, and probably the BET Awards, Lifetime Achievement Awards.
Hmm. One of the greatest moments for me was we were on the road, and we were driving the station wagon, and we were in the middle of Colorado somewhere, Wyoming or somewhere, in the middle of the wilderness, and there was nothing around but sagebrush and mountains, and all of a sudden on the radio comes this dum 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 do 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 do, and the music and I'm talking about, where have I heard this that before? and it turns out to be the Backstabbers, in the middle of nowhere, where you know that if they're playing your record, you know it's got to be a hit record. And so to me, that was like a great moment for me. I still remember it so vividly that it was just like, we finally made it. We're in the middle of nowhere.
And we made it.
Yeah, right.
Now, I bet you got everybody's got a memory of when you were number one and when you got that call, you know, hey, you know, your song Love Train, number one.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you remember where you were.
Oh, wow, man. I really can't remember where I was.
There's been so many.
Yeah. The only time that I was riding and they gave us great news was when they called us and told us that we were in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And we were on tour heading from Buffalo, New York to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And right. They called us and told, it was snowing outside, snow everywhere. Mm. And they told us we were inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which was really
nothing better than that, right?
Yeah.
Nothing better than that. So, I mean, for guys who've been now in six different decades, if you could do this again, is there a decade that you would prefer to be in? Were you happy in the decade, 70s and 80s, that you guys kind of dominated the music world? Or is there another time? Like today, we were talking off air about music today. Music today is kind of hard. It's, it's a difficult business.
Yeah,
it's a much shorter leash. The record companies give you, you know, much less time to prove yourself.
Right. To me, the 70s, were a great time because that's when, to me, that show business was really show business. You were able to have record stores. You could go down on to different cities and they would be playing your record on the streets. Mm-hmm. You actually sold records. You actually did promotion. You went to neighborhood stores and you signed autographs for the people. To me, that was really the music business. After you got past the 70s into the 80s, it started being more
business.
Mechanical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Became about sales and less about
absolutely.
The art.
And like now, it's more, like we were saying earlier, it's more popularity contest than about selling records. Mm-hmm. You get the streams, you get the followers. Mm-hmm. That don't mean that you're really selling records.
Right.
It means that people are passing your stuff around and you're getting no money for it.
And it doesn't even really mean that you're that talented.
Right.
You know, it just means that you won the popularity contest. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's like being in school. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're that you should be the homecoming queen or king. Mm-hmm. It means that you are the most popular. And you could be breaking in houses and stuff, you know what I mean? And then you become the homecoming king.
and you know, everybody get a ribbon.
Right, right.
Everybody don't deserve a ribbon.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Somebody, there's a guy that's working extra hard all night long. Mm-hmm. He's spending that time grinding away, and everybody get a ribbon? Mm. Why? You didn't spend that much time as this guy did to do this. You know, everybody don't deserve a ribbon.
Right.
I think the 70s and 80s gave you a better view of what you are actually doing and what you are actually about as far as your appeal to the public because they came out to shows if you were about something and you sold them out. So the 70s and 80s, it changed after that. I mean, the whole business seemed like it changed. Record companies start to disappear, and the marketplaces started to dwindle after the 70s and 80s. You can no longer get on a tour bus and actually make it make sense because the cities are too far apart.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you don't have. We played the major markets in most states and then the secondaries. Mm-hmm. So you could stay in a state three or four nights. Mm-hmm. Now you play New York and you got to get out of there.
Right. Off to Boston for the next night.
Yeah. Exactly. You got to go to Massachusetts to do your next gig. Mm-hmm. So we're in Connecticut tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And then we have to fly all the way to the other end of the country for the next job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this weekend you've got a show in New York, right? I mean, you're doing a special show, and I know they're going to be broadcasting on PBS.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a PBS special.
That's tomorrow, actually.
Oh, tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's when that's going to be.
That was recorded.
And the Grammy Museum and all of these shows you guys
got to do that
nonstop. And I know that, you know, back in the day, people had to be showmen. You had to put on a show.
Yeah, you know.
And you guys wear tuxes. You wear outfits that all match, and it is a show, and it's class. Now it's hoodies, it's t-shirts, it's ripped up jeans.
Some of them don't even have on shirts.
Yeah, or they take them off right away.
They take them off.
And you had dance moves, you know.
First song, they rip their shirt
off. They don't
off.
Do that anymore. Yeah. They're just not making music anymore like that.
You know what I think helped bring that about is that the rock and roll artists were able to go out there and just dress any way. Like if you went and saw the Stones, they dressed any kind of headbands and all of that. So naturally, the R&B artists and the black artists start feeling like, well, we don't have to spend all, because it costs a lot of money to dress like that. Mm-hmm. It's still very pricey for us to dress like that.
True.
So they said, well, now we can wear our personal clothes also, and we can go out and perform. But our audience expects those tucks.
Right.
They expect those colors. They expect those lights. They want to see that. And if we don't give them that, then they feel like we've shortchanged them.
Right, yeah, right.
Our choreographer was a show business guy. And he said, a hit record will last you. You can work on a hit record maybe 2 or 3 years. But if I give you a hit act, you can work the rest of your life as long as you want to.
Mm. Very profound.
Yeah, that's real good advice.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Real good advice.
And that entails the dress and the looking good and doing the right things on stage. Mm-hmm. And he was a stickler for that. He would come to a show with a little portable tape recorder, and he'd record the whole thing. And then when we get to rehearsal, he'd set it on the little desk and walk away, and you'd hear him saying, now, Walter, you know, you're standing there groping for words. You should be talking right now.
You know, and to add on to what Walter is saying, when you have people like the Beyoncés, mm-hmm. the reason why Beyoncé is Beyoncé is because Beyoncé gets it.
Yes.
Beyoncé knows that there's show in this show business.
Yes.
And her dad was a huge O.J. fan. And so that's the era he came up in, mm-hmm. the show business, the costumes, the actual performance. Mm-hmm. Beyoncé got it honest. She came up like that.
Right.
Well, a lot of these artists think that she just arrived. Mm-hmm. We knew this little girl when she was like 16, 17 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
15, we had 16. 15, 16. In Houston. She used to be around us when we would do things, even when she was with Destiny Child. Mm-hmm. Even when we did the movie, she hung around us. You know what I mean? During the movie. I mean, she's a sponge.
She asked me, well, how do you do that step? I'd show it to her, mm-hmm. and we do it in the movie.
Still love me. call for anything, cause through his eyes we all look the same.
Some of that stuff that we did together was choreography. Yeah, it was choreographed.
Because our choreographer we had in the movie didn't have a clue. We had a choreographer in the movie. Hey, man, tell the truth and shame the devil. We had a choreographer in the movie. She was giving us choreography, and Eddie, Walter, myself, we would sit there and it's like, hold it. You can't get to that foot without lifting this foot.
You have to release one foot to move to the next foot.
And she wasn't releasing.
She wasn't releasing nothing. I'm talking about, girl, you gonna break your leg.
We was talking about a tap dancer. Mm. Charlie Atkins, of Atkins and Coles. Cole and Atkins, the best that ever done it. So we was taught by a tap dancer. So he taught us the correct way. Mm-hmm. What you see on stage, it's not actually what you see on stage. What we're doing is more intricate than what people perceive it.
Right. A lot of rehearsals. You know, you just walk out there and just do
3 months. A lot of work.
Oh, yeah. Six days a week. Mm. 3 months.
And you got moves for every song.
Yeah.
Never the same song.
Yeah, man.
That's amazing.
And then you get it. You practice it so much till whenever the music starts, your feet will automatically start doing what it's supposed to do.
Right.
You don't even have to think about it. They just automatically go to it.
Yeah.
This is what we've practiced so much that the feet just get the moving.
Because I was watching a video of you guys recently. I'm wondering, I was thinking the exact same thing you're saying is, how are they thinking about their movements, choreography, and the words of the song at the same time?
Because they go together.
They go together.
The words and the movements match.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. What kind of advice do you give when people ask you what can I take from the OJs to make myself successful?
Oh, I'm glad you cleaned
hard
that up.
Work.
Hard work and dedication.
And dedication and knowing your material.
Mm-hmm.
Know your material. Know the music. Mm-hmm. If you know the music, you can do whatever. You can do it. It's all in the music.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have a favorite OJ song?
Love
Each
Train.
One of you, Love Train?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell all the
And I know that it must be a thrill when you're in a foreign country where they don't speak English, but they know every word to every song you're singing.
And they sing it in English.
Yeah. And they sing it in English.
They sing it in English.
Isn't that wonderful?
The funniest part is go to Japan and hear them sing Sunshine. You only what?
Sunshine.
You're going to get in trouble.
We are on in Japan, guys.
I love it over there.
So let me ask you this. Do you have favorite places you like to go? And I know Japan's on your list, but do you have other favorite places that you like to go?
Oh, well, look.
It's
I
rough
like
out
England.
Of the U.S.
And I'm about to you say know, the same thing.
Traveling's hard.
I love London.
I love England.
I love London. Yeah. London.
Yeah, that was
I
your first it. Stop on the love train.
Yeah, but
London. I was hoping it'd be Detroit, but it was.
London has.
It was London.
London England. Has an old school feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where they actually, they still play vinyl over there. Mm-hmm. They still buy CDs. They buy records.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. And it's a trip how we would do
and
those
the
concerts.
And the food tastes like I'm eating my shirt.
I mean.
No, there's a lot of people left too. They got a place over there called the sexy. They don't like salt and pepper. They don't like Louisiana hot sauce.
That's for what?
You might as well pull your shirt off and bite it.
They got a place over there called the Sexy Fish. Really great food, man. Really great
food. Yeah, man.
I went to the spaghetti house.
He told him about the spaghetti house, man, and he decided to go when we was leaving. But he ate the whole time he ate in his room. They don't bring salt and pepper. They don't do that at the hotel, man. Because they know them people got high blood pressure and everything. They ain't giving you no seasoning.
Especially no hot sauce.
Especially no hot sauce.
We're talking with the OJs, who are promoting a brand new album, their first in 2 decades, and it's called The Last Word. So tell me about this album. Tell me how this differs from the last album 24 years ago.
Not a lot of difference. It because they made it, they intentionally went and cut it with live musicians. Mm-hmm. They went and really, they wanted to mimic what we had done in the earlier years. And so that they used that as a roadmap to what they did on this album. Mm-hmm. And as far as the messages is concerned,
tough times. Tough times.
Yeah, we're just talking about
we are in tough
we're
times.
We're talking about things that that are going on now, and whether you want to hear it or not, this is what we're talking about right now.
Right.
The one that sticks out the most to me is the song, "If There's a Heart Out There, Show Love." And it says, lyrically, it's really strong. And it's the kind of song that makes you think and brings people back together. Then we did another one called Above the Law.
Yeah.
And I can guess what that one is.
It has a lot to say.
Yeah. Mm.
It's very truthful, and hopefully it'll help.
Mm-hmm. Music, rather than you know, is it our solace, our inspiration? You know, I mean, people turn to music to escape the headlines and things like that. So you guys have obviously put a lot of thought and time into creating this new album.
And what else is different? Normally we have on an OJ album at least 3 really solid ballads, but we don't have on this one. We have one, and it's one that was recreated by Betty Wright and Eddie and Steve, and it's I'll Be Sweeter Tomorrow. We did it probably in the late 60s.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then Linda Jones came along and had a smash on it after we had a good hit record on it as well. So it's well known, but I like the way we did it again this time. Mm-hmm. And it's the only ballad on the album.
Mm. Is there anybody you want to work with that you haven't worked with yet? I mean, you guys have worked with everybody in the music business.
You know,
Quincy Jones.
Quincy Jones?
I just, you know, in his heyday, I really thought he was a great
producer.
Mm-hmm. Especially when he did the stuff with Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. the early stuff that he did with Michael Jackson. I just felt like we could have done some great music with him. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
And we really need Babyface to do what he said he was going to do. He said we was on his bucket list. He wanted to do an OJ album. Way. Babyface need to come on and do this OJ album.
Yeah, that's right. So this is not the last album.
We're going to be on his bucket list. This
is, we kick the bucket.
Kick the bucket.
So, Eric, we got it here now. This is not the last album.
No, it's kind of sorted.
Calls you up.
If those people buy this album, if those people buy this album and they can see where it can make cents, mm-hmm. dollars and cents, mm-hmm. then they'll do another.
Yeah.
But you guys shouldn't walk away. I mean, you're still young, obviously. You got your health. Thank
I
God.
Don't know where you got that. That part, yeah.
Young at heart.
And I don't know where you got walk away either, bro.
Bucket comes to mind.
you saw how long it took us to get here, didn't you? I don't know where walking came from.
I mean, if this is your last album, can you leave the business feeling satisfied and content? Are you going to leave and saying we've done everything we wanted to do, we've achieved everything we wanted to achieve, there's nothing left for you guys to do in the business, that you still say, come on guys, let's do this?
Now, I think every great artist has had a second shot. Mm-hmm. At reaching that pinnacle one more time. I think that we have not done that yet. I think that we need that. If we could do that second time at the top, mm-hmm. real hard, real mm-hmm. real hot, I think then I'd feel satisfied.
That what's love got to do with
yeah.
it type
yeah.
of.
Yeah, yes. You know, like yes. Tina Turner.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I agree with it, but it's greed.
now we're cutting down to the chase. Now we're getting to the truth.
Yeah, I agree with it. I love it.
I love the honesty.
Hit it one more time, but it's greed.
You want some more money? Huh?
Yeah.
You know what I can see is you guys genuinely like each other, which is not something that happens today in music too
They're
much.
They're funny, man.
I mean, you genuinely like
they
each
are
other.
The funniest. These two guys right here. Man,
I think we've grown to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, this is our little candy store and we want to keep it open and running, you know. So it's about getting along and reaching that point to where you can get along. I know him too.
We depend on each other. Mm-hmm. We depend on each other.
We have to.
You know,
at this point,
when there's no one else around, we mm-hmm. depend on us. And
yeah.
we depend on
we're
each other.
We're bottom line.
Yeah, we're bottom line. Mm-hmm. We depend on each other to get each other through yeah. different things. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So and we laugh a lot.
And they're brutal with it.
Mm. Yeah.
Well you guys have been there for each other for 60 years.
Yeah, but you got to be honest with it. You can't sugarcoat it. You got to let them know.
Honest.
Through the good and the bad and the tough times too.
That's right.
And I know that, you know, Eddie, you had your sons, may they rest in peace, who put out a great hit, you know, Casanova as LaVert.
Well, me and him started out with LaVert at mm-hmm. when he was 15 years old, we took him in the. Well, he was younger than that.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah,
he
I was. Think it was about 12 or 13 when we first. Took
but
him
it
in
developed
the
in him a hunger to write and produce.
Yeah,
and that's what he did, and he was good at it. Mm. He was really good at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he deserved everything that he got. We made him work for it, mm-hmm. and his thing was he wanted to be as big as the OJs, and he just wanted to, his thing was, one day I just want to stand up here with you and let you know, Dad, that I'm just as good as you are. And I tell him, no. Ain't gonna happen. Yeah.
Well, the music lives forever. I mean, music will live and forever be a tribute to your kids,
God
to you
that.
Guys, for all the musicians before you and all the musicians after you.
Yeah.
The music lives forever, and your message resonates now, and it will continue. I mean, you know, there's specific reasons for some of the songs you've written, but we can apply those to many situations in our lives now and, unfortunately, in the future. And I'm so happy that you guys have a new album out. It's long overdue. It's called The Last Word, and where can people get this record? You know, it can online. How about your website?
YouTube.
Amazon. All those places. But how about your website?
You know,
OJ's. The OJ's. Mighty OJ's.
That's OJ's. The website, mightyOJ's.com?
Yes.
And what's the future? What do you got planned? Are you going to do a world tour for this album? What are you guys talking about and thinking about? Because right now you're doing all these special shows with PBS and in New York at the Grammy Museum and whatnot, but what about a tour?
I think what they're really doing now, he's venturing out doing his Eric Nolan Grant thing. Mm-hmm. He's got a radio show that he does every Sunday, and he's also cut his own album. Walter, same thing, has cut his own album. We're venturing out doing our own little thing in our own little way.
And Eddie got three albums out, man.
Yeah, man.
Eddie got three albums right now.
But right now,
within the OJs, he got three albums.
But
me and Walt got two. I got one.
I sold 20 copies.
Yeah, mine went wood too.
I don't know. See what I'm saying, man? Let me tell you now, they'd be very honest about themselves. Mm. They have no problem with it. They're not going to sugarcoat it.
But you can't hide it. You can't hide it. It's a different business.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You do the best you can and accept the results. Mm-hmm.
Have you guys thought about writing an autobiography, either individually or together? Because there must be so many stories to
tell. I've been on these guys about doing this movie. Mm-hmm. You know what they tell me?
What?
They ain't telling. They say they want sensationalism. They're not telling. They want you to tell on people.
They want you to tell on people.
You're not going to tell on people. Make up some names, you know.
See, because the minute you tell on people,
right,
then they say, well, where were you at when this
was going? Right.
Oh, no.
What was your participating?
Robert Townsend.
Your involvement.
Robert Townsend, who did the Five Heartbeats. He grilled these guys, man, and trying to get them to tell this story. Say, look, Robert, we ain't telling you all that.
I don't care what you want to know.
What you want to know. We not telling.
Get out of here.
Because they would be telling on some people, look, man.
Can't do that.
No, it's a lot of that stuff is very personal, man. And, you know, and a lot of these people that we've known and that we've interacted with, you know, I value their friendship and I value our relationship. I refuse to tell on them. Mm-hmm. I refuse to tell on myself. You know what I'm saying?
And we value our lives.
Well, you guys have given us so many great memories, and I'm sure a lot of them will remain secrets among the, you know, you guys and the stories behind the scenes and whatnot. But thank you for your music. Thank you for all you have done for American pop culture and for the world. Really, I mean, you know, you can never say thank you enough. And I do have to thank you guys because you guys are true icons. You know, I mean, not many people can achieve what you guys have achieved. And on behalf of, you know, the people I work with here at the Voice of America and the audience that I reach, I want to say thank you.
And thank you because it's been a blessing for us. Mm. And you can't top it. I can't. In anything I've ever done in my life, this has been the most fulfilling, and I'd do it again.
I have to agree with Walter. Me coming up, I was a huge fan of these guys, of the OJs, because they were our superheroes in Cleveland. And when I got the chance to, via Gerald Levert, when I got a chance to, you know, join the guys, it's 25 years later. You know what I mean? And it's been an experience, and I was raised in this group. I was raised to be a man in this group by two men. Mm-hmm. So
what was the best advice they gave you?
They told me when I first got in the group, they said, young man, save your money. pay your taxes, and leave them women alone.
That is a perfect way to end. You guys are amazing. You're as wonderful getting to know as you are from the image that we have of you, watching you all these years on television and listening to you on the radio. It's the OJs. You got Live in New York on PBS coming up, the Grammy Museum special coming up, all these great things happening, and the new album, which is The Last Word. The OJs here in Washington, D.C. Gotta love them. Thanks for watching. This is Border Crossings on the Voice of America.